Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at Breezeline.com.
Hello, my name is Jamila Jamil, and I feel better about my hair for being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Oh my God, what a cruel blow.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there! Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, third season of the podcast. This is my second take of the intro, because on the first take, I just started making noises.
Yeah.
I went,
you sounded like a chipmunk.
Yeah, I went, well, anyway, and then I just ran out of steam. I don't know what happened there. You guys giggled, but it could easily have been some sort of cerebral occlusion.
If you do have really bad mental problems, we'll never know.
I know. That's
why we were giggling.
Yeah. People have often said to me, if you had some kind of terrible degenerative brain issue, we wouldn't know. Because Sona, back this up. Half the things I say are nonsense.
Nonsense.
Absolute gibberish. And I speak in gibberish.
Yes.
And so if, God forbid, something happened and I got some kind of clot in my brain and started acting and speaking foolishly,
right,
people would say, yay, here's a check for more money, because that's what you do. And be like, I'd be making gestures, no, 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 and they'd be going, ha, ha, he, he, he.
I would be worried if you started making sense.
Yeah, I just assumed something like this happened years ago.
Yeah, if you started making sense, I'd be like, we need to get him to a hospital immediately.
Okay, I just thought of a story. I don't know. I hope I haven't told this. That involves cerebral hemorrhage.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so.
Let's hear it.
Okay.
Dad, tell us the one about cerebral hemorrhage.
Okay, gather around, kids. Everyone gather around. You all have your cocoa?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go. No, serious. This really happened. When my son was a little kid, his school had a what's called a wax museum day, where all the kids dress up as a certain historic figure.
Oh.
They have to pretend to be that figure. And what happens is you go through like it's an exhibit and they put a little fake button next to each kid and the kid acts frozen. So the kids are frozen and different. And so my son, of course, wanted, because he's such a techophile, wanted to be Steve Jobs. So he was holding a laptop and he had glasses on and a little black turtleneck and he was frozen. And if you went up and pushed his button, he'd go, hello, my name is Steve Jobs. I was born May 5th, whatever, 1951. I pioneered the personal computer. And he'd give this whole speech and then he'd stop and freeze and you'd push the button again. And he'd go, hi, I'm Steve Jobs. So that's how it worked.
Oh.
So I was walking through and I was looking at some, and then there was one that I stopped at. It was a kid who was frozen and he was wearing a suit and he's standing up. And I pushed the button and he said, look out, grenade. I made an explosion sound and then said, hi, I'm Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And I was like, what? And he went, I was the, whatever he was, I was the, you know, 30th president of the United States. And I was in the Great Depression and everything, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, grenade? And he goes like, I saw the country through the Depression and then I saw us through World War II. And I was like, I guess that's what grenade's all about. Uh-huh. And he said, eventually bringing us to victory in Europe. I died April 15th, 1945 of a brain bleed. And then he froze again. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I pushed the button again and he went, look out, grenade. Hi, I'm Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I was born in 19, and I was so entranced that A, he's standing, which Franklin Roosevelt could not do. Franklin Roosevelt's throwing a grenade. Why is Franklin Roosevelt, he led us in World War II, but he didn't fight World War II. What are you talking about? And I loved it.
Oh,
and
man.
So I stayed there and I just watched it for a while and parents would come up and they'd push the button. Look out, grenade. Hi, I'm Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I grew up in Hyde Park, New York. I was the governor of it. I died April of 19... And he has this big smile on his face, leading the U.S. to victory. I died in April of 1945 of a brain bleed. And then he went back into the frozen position. And I thought, I'm never going to leave this place.
Isn't it? How old was he? They must have been really young, right?
I want to say he was 7, oh 8. I don't know.
Seeing a 7-year-old saying, I died of a brain bleed.
I died in April of 1945 of a brain bleed. And then freezing, going back to the throwing. And let me make it clear, Franklin Roosevelt is throwing the grenade. He's in World War II throwing a grenade, and he's also telling people, look out, grenade, which you don't say to the enemy when you throw a grenade. You don't say, look out there, Nazis, here comes the grenade, and then toss it, and then say, by the way, I'll die in a year, in April, of a brain bleed. Man, see, when I say I've got a story about a cerebral hemorrhage,
oh, man.
I've got a story about a cerebral hemorrhage.
Oh, that was an all-timer.
I like that one, yeah. Well, anyway, we got a lot to talk about today. I'm very excited about our guest. Thrilled about our guest. I'll just say it. I may be in love with this woman, but that's okay. I will just keep that to myself.
Well, you just said it.
I just said it. It's true. I said it out loud. This is actually going out into the world, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and it's clear throughout the entire interview.
No, yeah,
too,
you did not hide it well at all. Yeah.
I know.
You're not good at playing it cool.
No. And when this guest showed up, I was holding flowers that I had bought for her that had wilted. And I was wearing a seersucker suit that's too small.
Look out,
and I said,
grenade!
Look out, grenade! Hi, Jamila. I love you. And I'm going to die 2 years from now in Warm Springs, Georgia, of a brain bleed. Well, I've given, you all know who it is, but I adore this woman. My guest today played Tahani Al-Jamil for 4 seasons on the hit NBC series The Good Place, one of the better television shows to be crafted, I think, in the last decade. Mm-hmm. Now she hosts her own podcast, I Weigh, with new episodes available every Thursday. I'm thrilled to talk with her today and in studio. These are usually over Zoom, but I am thrilled that she's able to be here in person. Jamila Jamil, welcome. Now, let's explain to the people listening that my hair is out of control during COVID. I have not had it cut. It is out of control. And I have said this, I look like the bully on Karate Kid. I look like I've got a weird headband. I've got a lot of hair.
Is that a head? I thought you'd had an injury.
Well, I'm trying to pass it off as a headband. I was in a tricycle accident on the way over here. Yeah, it does. You know what I should do is I should get a white headband and I should put a big red stain on it. And then I'll get all kinds of incredible attention from people. Mm-hmm. No, I went with headband a while ago because I thought it just gets the hair out of the way. If you're stuck without a mask, it can be a mask. It's a really bad look. Your hair is spectacular.
I've had the same haircut for 32 years, so I'm a hair coward. You know what I mean? It's easy. And also, it's created a great global mystery around what is under my bangs. Right. And I have obviously told people it's a little dick. Or a very big clit.
Well, good Lord. No, good. This is just where I wanted the conversation to go.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. I told my mother, she's never listened to the podcast, I said, tune into this one, Jamila Jamil. And she was like, okay. And so we're off to the races. Mm-hmm. I adore you. I think you know that because—
Likewise.
I think we were at someone took a picture of us at some event and I think I posted, oh, here I am with my TV crush. And it was, you know, what was nice is that it was sanctioned by my wife. My wife was like, yes, that is someone you should have a crush on. And I sanction this crush. I then started asking other questions and she shut it down real fast. But
my boyfriend is outside right now. Sanctioning my crush. So, you know, a simp.
I want to say something else. This is, in all of COVID, throughout this whole crisis, I've been talking to people on the podcast through Zoom. You and I are in the same room.
Mm-hmm. If we die, we die together.
We die together. And it's amazing. We're socially distant. And I'm also emotionally distant.
He is on my lap. Mm-hmm. I hope that happens.
I thought this was what you wanted. I misunderstood. We're in the same room. It's so nice to be in a room with you. I'm a big fan. And I am very happy right now because I don't know about you. I'm just so missing human beings, especially delightful human beings. I feel like I'm in a crisis mode because I just am not with people. I'm with some people, but it's the same people every day. Yeah. And I can't take it anymore. My family's got to go. I'm getting a new family. I'm starting another one outside of my existing family.
Amazing.
Yeah. So now this is the part where you say, oh, and it's, you know, it's great to be with you, Conan, and all that stuff.
I was paid to be here. Can I have my money now?
Well, now, how much? How much did they have to pay you to get you in here?
$25,000.
Good God. Wow. Now someone's coming in. They're bringing a suitcase of cash. It looks like a drug deal is going down.
No, I love being here with you, but I have to say, as a massive introvert, I have loved not seeing anyone else. I'm okay if you're the only person I see this year. This is enough. This, my cup runneth over, so I'm good. Like,
now, let's talk about that, because you say you're an introvert. What are we talking about here? I mean, you really dislike being around other people, or does it make you uptight?
My best year of my life was when I broke my back and I stayed in bed completely by myself, didn't see another person and was on morphine, eating ice cream, watching television. Greatest year of my life. People are like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. It was the best year of my life, still unmatched. Well, sorry, Ted Danson, but...
Okay, we'll get to Ted Danson in a second, but morphine and ice cream, I'm told, is an insane combination. Yeah.
Really fat and really thrilled and having an amazing time.
How did you break your back?
I was running away from a bee that wasn't chasing me. So I just saw the bee, thought the smartest thing to do would be to run into the road to get away from it, which would make me much safer. And in fairness, I did not end up getting stung, but I did get hit by one car into another car.
Oh my God.
And broke my back.
And irony of ironies, the car was driven by another bee. Yeah. And so stupid. You just told me you were horribly injured by a car.
I was fine.
And I went for a joke. And
it was the best year of my life. You're safe. It was the greatest time ever. And it's where I got to discover, like, I really got into comedy. I really got into film and TV and music. I'll never forget that. But just no people around.
No people. So, and you liked it.
I loved it. So this year, like, I've been training for this. So I didn't really have friends until I was late into my teens. I've been training for this my whole life. It's my Olympics.
This is... you are ready for this. You are ready to go. Let me ask you something about, did this change your life and that you thought, I'm going to die? Or did you not think that? Did you always know I'll be okay?
As a teenager, I didn't think that. I mean, to be honest, when it first happened, I got right back up and walked home because I had so much adrenaline running through me that I thought I was fine. I was reassuring. I was worried about the driver because he was a very old man who was really fucking traumatized and it was totally my fault. And then I ran home and decided not to tell my mum. And it wasn't until I passed out randomly an hour later and then woke up unable to move that I realized something was wrong. But I was so stoned that I really just didn't think it was that serious throughout.
Right.
I loved it. I was lying down. Who doesn't want to lie down? This isn't what anyone wants to hear, but I had a great time.
It's nice. I mean, again, a lot of this is the morphine talking, which I'm told is an amazing. I've never had morphine. I'm told it's amazing.
It's like being kissed by virgins on the inside of your veins.
Oh, my Lord.
By virgins who are good kissers, which is very unusual.
You know, that's the other thing I was going to say, is that virgins are terrible kissers.
Kissed by porn stars.
Yes. Well, they don't do a lot of kissing.
Well, it depends where they're kissing.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's stick with that. Yes. Virgins who aren't kissing you on the... I mean, porn stars who
are... blowjobs on the inside.
Oh, gosh. Your face. Well, those can be quite violent. Not that I've seen a lot of porn. I mean, I've watched my share.
You mean you have shares in...
I have a lot of shares in pornography. Yeah. I've invested very, very wisely in pornography. I've made a veritable fortune, and it's going to put my children through college. So it's all worthwhile.
Great.
I've never had that. What I did have once is I was...
I've made you go redder.
Yes, I have.
Every time.
I know. You always... but I like it. It's... I'm very titillated and humiliated at the same time. And I love the word titillated. I was mugged once, and it was a bunch of guys around my age, but one of them hit me really hard in the face.
Shit.
And shattered my nose, and I went to the hospital, and they gave me, I think it was like a mixture of cocaine and laudanum to like just put me out. It's the happiest I've been in my entire childhood.
Yeah.
I just, when doctors give you the good stuff, it's fantastic. And I don't use drugs.
Yeah.
I'm not like you. I'm not constantly using.
I've never taken any hard drugs, and I've never drunk alcohol.
Okay. I was just putting that out there to see what I'd get. I think we have a lot of things in common. We haven't used drugs. We're both very tall and very attractive. And we both grew up watching TV, lying down. You had an excuse. Your back was broken.
Yeah. I did that before the car accident.
I was the lazy. I was just a lazy shit who watched TV and pretended my back was broken.
But it was amazing to me that I got the experience at 19. I really think all children should be hit by a car just once, because it just...
I have often thought the same thing.
I really do. And, you know, if I were president, but I was able to gain this extraordinary level of perspective in my life, because, you know, once you lose the ability to even piss by yourself, your value system completely shifts forever. So it's been super handy in this incredibly vacuous, like bizarre competitive industry where everyone is always thinking about what they don't have rather than being grateful for what they do have. I mean, we're a whole generation that is obsessed with what we don't have.
Right.
We've been trained into that by commercialism. And so...
And the internet now.
Yeah. And I've just always been happy to be able to piss by myself. That's always been the bar. It's never been like this. The benchmark has never changed. So I'm always thrilled with everything.
That's fantastic. What a wonderful...
low bar.
No, but what a wonderful partner you would be. I mean, you just, as long as you have access to your own bathroom and can piss by yourself, you're loving the partner you're with. That's fantastic.
Having a great time. I'm a very simple, chilled human being. I just don't like people who aren't funny. And so that's why I prefer to be in my house on my own or with my two funny housemates, one of whom is someone I am in a relationship with.
Got it. Well, just give me a chance. Throughout this hour, I will convince you.
Cool.
Would your boyfriend be cool with me just hanging around the house?
100%.
No, but let me go further. I'm really hanging around a lot.
Yeah, no, that's fine. He would be totally down. He's also another overly tall ginger. So this is, he'll have a dad figure.
Oh, why did you do that? Why did you do that? That was, it was so good. And then a dad figure. Okay, that's great. That's fantastic. Well, I would be a very, I guess I must have had him at a very inappropriately young age.
I think it was fine.
I had him when I was like 8. Is that the idea?
You had him at a very normal sort of mid sort of 30s.
Okay.
Time.
Okay. Well, we've established, thanks
late,
to
maybe.
Jamila. Oh, no, it was not late. So basically, I had to have, I was pretty much impotent when I had him.
You're a child bride.
I'm enraged now. I'm enraged. I've been destroyed by you, someone I've put on a pedestal, and you've destroyed me. There's nothing left.
That's what pedestals are for. They're for kicking people down.
And we're tearing statues down. Yeah. And I think you just tore down the Confederate Conan statue and destroyed it. It's gone now. There's so much that fascinates me about you. First thing is that you're fearlessly honest. And I do love that about you. Do you ever scare yourself?
Several times a day, therefore.
Right.
But yeah, I think I am scarily honest, but I just grew up around a lot of very dishonest people. And I grew up in England, which is just an inherently dishonest place because everyone's lying fundamentally just about being happy.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
People have said to me sometimes, oh, Conan, you should come over here and do some comedy over here. And I'll think, oh, they'll just tear the shit out of me. I'm terrified of Londoners. They seem like they...
judgmental pricks.
Is that it? Is that what they are?
But not actually towards Americans. We love an American. We are just cruel to our own, especially if they find success.
Well, that's the tall poppy syndrome.
The tall poppy syndrome, yeah. So we're very, very strange about success, but we love a successful American. We love a Julia Roberts, but we just don't want Hugh Grant to do very well. Does that make sense?
Well, it all worked out.
Yeah. So, you know, it's...
Sorry, Hugh, come on. You and I are very good friends. He's my flatmate. I have noticed that. I mean, it's true about the Irish, too. Oh, look at him over there with his success. Mm-hmm. Feckin' thinks he's all of that in the back. You know what I mean? It's just like, well, where is that
German?
That was me doing Portuguese. You know what's so funny? I'm an Irish guy who can't do an Irish accent. And to really do an Irish accent, I have to do a fake cartoon one of, oh, I got stars and clothes. But the real one I could never do.
No.
And it's really hurt me getting parts.
But it is like, you know, we are fundamentally dishonest about how we feel. Even our humility is fake. I have like a big weird theory about why we're so faux humble or why we're so self-deprecating.
What?
You ready, Colin? You ready? Okay. So I think that there is a forced humility in the British because the British went out and tried to colonize the world, essentially,
right.
And got sent packing right on their ass back to their tiny little isle. So for a while there, they thought they had these vast continents that they had ownership over and were told to fuck the fuck off. And so I think the embarrassment, the mortification of having gone out there with such a big ambition and all the raping, all the pillaging, all the murdering,
right.
And to still be defeated and sent packing to now just live in this tiny little isle, I think means that they are trying to be self-deprecating in advance of anyone making fun of them for their tremendous fuck up.
Okay, a couple things I want to say about that.
Sure.
First of all, I think you might be onto something. You're neglecting that it worked for the British for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Now, they managed to...
But do you think that they were self-deprecating back then? Because I just don't think you can be self... What are you going to do? Like, go around raping everyone in, you know, all these Native Americans being like, sorry, the problem, sorry.
Right.
No, I think that they were bolshy motherfuckers.
Yes. I think at the time, they probably... But now, what you're talking about is they also lost their empire so fast.
Yes, so I think they're very embarrassed, and I think that's where the like instant display of self-mortification comes from, the failure.
Now, here's my question then, because I brought up the Irish. The Irish act a similar way, and we didn't conquer anybody. The Irish can't keep
just
their
own. Very hungover.
No, I know. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me. We're very, whatever, the self-deprecating, putting ourselves down, very mordant wit. And we never conquered the globe. We barely got up out of bed and got outside, you know, and moved a potato around with one hoe. I mean, I don't understand. I don't know where that came from. That's a mystery.
That's
to
fair.
Me.
I don't know. And I also don't know enough about the history of Ireland in particular. I just know that the British have a lot to be sorry and embarrassed about. So therefore, I think that's where that comes from. But yeah, growing up around that feeling of like, you can't tell people how you really feel. You can't tell people that you're sad. You have to like have the stiff upper lip. And also growing up around very manipulative, like compulsive liars a lot of the time, you know, people within my school or people within my own household meant that I was just tired of the bullshit and I needed to just get the exact thought I have, which has been very much so to my detriment sometimes publicly. But that's how it is. I would rather be honest than swallow my feelings. And this also comes from an interesting place. Do you mind if I tell you the interesting place?
I forbid it.
It's not my vagina, don't worry. Also, when I was 26, I had a fucking terrible nervous breakdown. I had very, very bad depression. And my depression wasn't like lying on a couch crying to sad music. It was very like numb, high-functioning depression. And so I didn't even know I had depression for so long, because the representation in Hollywood is that you visibly look like you're falling apart, whereas I just didn't feel anything.
Right.
I didn't feel anything at all. And part of that is because I was being dishonest with myself. So in lying about how I felt, I wasn't just lying to other people. I was lying to myself that I could cope. And I think that that detachment from me is what caused my depression. And so I think part of like getting out of that nervous breakdown and that meltdown was for me to just be like, I can't hold anything in anymore. I have to.
So that's what happened. You didn't have a moment of, basically became too unbearable. And that's when you said, okay, screw it. I'm just going to call things as they are for the rest of my life. It wasn't, you went into a certain kind of therapy and had a breakthrough.
No, I mean, I did have therapy a couple of years after that, but no, it was truly a breakdown of just realizing why I'm so unhappy, why I feel lonely, even with myself. And it was because I wasn't a truth teller. I was just a fucking, I was insincere. I was the clown, you know, I had to be the life and soul of the party and the entertainer. And I always came with like stupid fucking anecdotes, and I didn't tell anyone who I really was. And I think now, warts and all, I've just decided to make it my journey and my entire goal to show the world exactly who I am and risk not being accepted, but at least be fundamentally honest to myself and true to myself. And I also think young people need that. We've grown up with so many people who are just not at all transparent. They don't tell the truth about anything, about how they look the way they do, about what's really going on in their head, about how they've achieved success. And so I think you have to show people the dark side of what you're like. Otherwise, they're comparing themselves to us.
Yes,
and
yes.
They think that there's something wrong with them because we seem to be just high functioning and perfect and effortless all the time.
Well, I've made it a life's mission to let any fan of mine know I am not high functioning and that...
But I think that's why I love you so much. I've loved you for such a long time, even from the UK, being able to watch your show on the internet, is because it felt like you were one of few people who felt like there was some honesty.
Well, that's nice. It's yet another thing that we have in common, in addition to our height and stunning looks, and I'm going to just keep hitting that again and again and again until it becomes true.
Sure. Fake it till you make it, mate.
incredible sexual prowess, both of us. But anyway.
I don't think either of us are actually known for that.
What I'm trying to get out there is that don't be fooled, ladies. Okay. This guy's an animal. Anyway, because that's just what.
A lemur,
yes. yeah. I didn't say tiger. I'm a very old lemur that's sleeping in a tree. And I've been injured. I've been injured in a brush fire, and I may not make it. I'm a lemur in the sheets, ladies.
I don't think you should be allowed to be called an adult until you're 30. I think 18 is preposterous to be called an adult, because you don't know fuck all about shit all until you are about 30. You only start to figure out who you actually are around then, because until your childhood trauma hasn't even surfaced until your late 20s. You don't even know where all your isms and idiosyncrasies come from yet. And they all start to catch up with all of us just before we enter into what I think is actual adulthood. So I'm really only just starting to figure this stuff out. And I really passionately, I think I'm going to say hate. I'm going with hate. I hate people who complain about getting older. I hate people who go like, oh, I don't want to say how old I am on my birthday.
Right.
Like, you're so fucking lucky. And I think, again, that comes from the car accident of realizing that I could have lost my life at 19. Yes, I got to do a lot of basically medical heroin and it was great, but it could have been really bad.
Right.
And I could have had no heroin and just been dead. And then I would never have got to meet you, which would have been a tragedy.
Yes. I am like a comedic morphine, if you will.
But, you know, I'm so lucky to have lived.
Yep.
You're so lucky to survive. So many people die so young. And if ever there was a fucking year where you realize how lucky you are to have your life, it's this year. We have to stop this bullshit. Women have to stop trying to look younger. Men have to stop expecting women to look young forever. It's fucking ridiculous. I just think generally we need to develop some gratitude, because life is infinitely better for me, morphine aside, than it was as a teenager. I was so confused. And also, we're so ill-prepared for life when we're young. Right. Schools fail us so much. It's so insane that I knew more about igneous rock than I knew about sexual consent or about depression or anxiety or right. how the world actually works. What's bullshit about the media? I was left like open to being completely blindsided by the world because parents of our generations like didn't talk to us about anything,
and schools
didn't. No,
yeah,
it was, you know, taboo. And I think that, you know, we came from generations in particular, and it's probably still exists, where you think that the ignorance and innocence have to be mutually exclusive. Whereas actually, I think it's the opposite. I think you can maintain someone's innocence for longer if you arm them with the information that will help them have the autonomy to avoid the things, the disasters that are going to leave them traumatized for decades. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And in my family, if we were watching a movie and two people held hands, everyone would turn away from the screen and pretend that they could look through the wall.
I'm like they had X-ray vision. Are you okay watching sex scenes?
No.
On TV? I can't bear it. Even on my own, I can't do it. I can't bear it. I've never seen 50 Shades. Never. If I hear that there's a sex scene in a film, I can't cope at all. I feel so intrusive.
I think you and I should get over this together, and your boyfriend. I want him there. But I think the three of us should watch 50 Shades together.
Can you imagine?
Yes.
I think we should film us watching Fifty Shades of Grey.
The camera should just be on us watching. And I'm going to be wearing a robe. I'm just saying. And in honor of your boyfriend, it's going to say dad on it.
I got to say, everywhere I go, people are talking about Monopoly Go. And for good reason. It's an absolute hit.
Yeah. I love Monopoly.
People love Monopoly. And look, Monopoly's been around for a very long time. It's one of the oldest board games ever. Okay.
Okay.
But lately I walk around and I just hear like Monopoly Go, Monopoly Go, Monopoly Go. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? What are you guys talking about? And they say, we're playing Monopoly Go. You can play it with your family, your friends. It's a straight delight. There's always something new to do. Partner events where you can build on each other's boards and crazy tournaments with team events you can recruit your friends for, or you can just compete to outdo them all on the leaderboards. Mm. And when you're not messing with your family and friends, Monopoly Go is always throwing new stuff at you. They have taken Monopoly to the next level. I didn't think Monopoly had to go to the next level, but they did. There's timed events like massive multipliers for all your winnings and challenges like treasure hunts or money sprees that have fun new mini games, plus with tons of rewards to collect, like stickers for trading with friends and hilarious emojis that are perfect for gloating, there's always a reason to dip back in.
Yeah.
Man, they cracked it, you know?
They did.
So join the fun. Download Monopoly Go now free on the App Store and Google Play. Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend is sponsored by ADT. Now ADT professionally installs Google Nest products so your home is safe and smart. You can check in on your home and manage your security systems from virtually anywhere. Google Nest cams can tell the difference between a person, an animal, a vehicle, or with the Nest doorbell, even a package. You can know that there's a package out there.
I know.
And not a person.
You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, sometimes a person rings the doorbell and I think it's a package. Anyway. And with Nest Aware as part of your monthly ADT service, you can get 30 days of event video history, even smarter notifications like when a familiar or unfamiliar face is seen. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. You can view video of an alarm event and verify or cancel an alarm with just a tap. I'm always setting off alarms accidentally. This is helpful for me.
Oh, good.
With the most trusted name in home security, adds the intelligence of Google, well, you got a home with no worries. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google, Nest Cam, Nest Doorbell, and Nest Aware are trademarks of Google LLC. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all sometimes have issues or things we need to talk about, get off our chest. I have that all the time, don't you, Sona?
I do.
Yeah, and we need people to talk to. And we carry around different stressors. We carry big stressors. We carry small stressors. I was raised in a culture where you're supposed to kind of bottle it up, and I've learned over time that that's not the best thing to do. If you do let things rattle around in there for a while without talking it out, it can affect your life very negatively. Well, therapy is a safe space where you can get things off your chest, figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down, If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. BetterHelp's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. A lot of people have a barrier towards getting therapy because they think, well, I don't know, I've got to find the person, talk to them. What if it's not a good match? Then it's awkward. None of that. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and then you switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Conan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Conan.
You have acted. I'm not an actor. I'm always myself. When I see a sex scene, I'm not just embarrassed for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm often embarrassed for the actors because I'm thinking they become so graphic. Mm-hmm. And so literally there's a guy saying, okay, this is where you're giving her anal. And it's these two adults who have to pretend that this thing is happening.
Yeah.
And it feels like such a humiliating way to earn a living.
Sex in itself is so stupid. Like the thrusting. Like, what are we doing?
What is the thrusting? What's like, thrusting?
Just the entrance.
Oh, once I'm in, I stay very still.
One push and then.
What I do is I slowly, and this is very graphic and I hope no one hears this. I go in very slowly. Often they don't know I'm in. Then I tell them, usually with a note. I have a handwritten note that I hand them that says I am now in. Then I move as little as possible. And I just try and stay there as long as I can.
Cool. Well, I don't know about everyone else, but I'm aroused.
Yes. I'm told, as I said, they call me the lemur. I like to crawl into a small space and I like to curl up and just be there. I'm told it's a very unerotic experience. I've been told that by all three of the women I've had sex with in my life. And they all said that was shockingly, and you know what? A lot of them were appreciative. They said, I've had these crazy wild rides in sex and I could just barely focus the next day at work. They often did good work, on their laptops while I was with them and in full action.
I'm not amazing in bed either. But I've got big boobs, so I don't have to be really.
What's that? Why does that mean you don't have to be?
Some of the reviews I've had three separate lovers, and this is out of five lovers ever.
I'm writing this down.
Five lovers ever? Five, maybe six. I think five and a half.
Five and a half? Who's that guy?
Let's not get into that.
Okay.
But. Let's feel sorry for him.
When you said five and a half, I thought I didn't realize we had dated.
Five and a quarter. I've been told by three separate men that making love to me, and they meant this, I think, as a compliment, felt like having sex with a memory foam mattress.
A memory foam, which means that you would absorb the contour of their body.
To any shape.
Shift to any shape. That's a compliment.
No, it's not just about being bendy, though. It's also that I have no muscles anywhere in my body other than my heart. So I am really like built like a human marshmallow with nipples.
But the thing is, you do provide great lower back support.
Great lumbar support.
Yeah.
And when
sex was over, they felt well rested.
I'm a comfortable shag, but I'm not an athlete in the sheets.
Right.
So I can't, like, I can give you three pumps of reverse cowgirl and then I'm out. I tap out real early.
I think anyone listening knows that you were being honest, but I was being self-deprecating, as is the Irish way. I'm a master. I'm a sexual master.
You did open my water bottle for me very fast. That means you have a massive cock. Well done.
Thank you. I didn't use my hands to open it. I am a sexual athlete, I've been described, in Sports Illustrated. Actually, mm-hmm. I was on the cover. No one's buying this, so I'm just going to walk away from it. Let's move on. Yes, I think that the fact that you and I are comfortable talking about this, meaning, and when I say that, I mean you're comfortable talking about it, mm-hmm. means that we are putting other people at ease, because there are a lot of people. I was kidding around a lot, but you are a stunningly attractive woman, and so there would be all these expectations that I'm sure women of any age would project onto you. that you're saying is doesn't match reality.
No, and it's not even like, because I've been unattractive more of my life, as in like societally deemed unattractive more of my life than I have been deemed attractive. So I'm not even shagging like a lazy girl who's just always had it come to me. You know, like my first kiss was 21, my first shag was 22, didn't have my first orgasm till I was 23. Like I am a slow learner who has just not really chosen to make up for lost time. I'm just chilling, you know, just not learning much, not overexerting myself. It's more of I'm just not an athlete, not an athletic guy, just bendy and soft, very soft, too soft, yeah. It would appear. Cool.
I'm thinking about things now. Can I ask a question? This may border on rule, but I don't want to let this go. You said, I don't have to be good at sex. I have big breasts.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That was just a joke of like, someone's so distracted by breasts.
But it's true. It's like dangling keys in front of a cat. They just look at it.
Careful, not that dangling, but you know what I mean? Like, it's
No, I didn't mean that your breasts were like these. I don't think they could start a car.
If they are, that's fine. That's lovely. But the point is that I've just like, it's, they are a distraction tactic. And mostly if I can just stay silent, I think that's enough for other people, because it's my trying to insert comedy into the bedroom that goes down very badly.
It doesn't go down well.
No. I had a boyfriend who once accidentally stuck it in the wrong hole for a brief second. And my exact words were, within a millisecond of that happening, was unexpected item in bagging area. which was the angriest I've ever seen someone look with me for trying to turn this. He was like, I'm really thrilled you've decided to start your stand-up career while I'm inside you. Uh-huh. But there was just like a, you know, most girls just wiggle and shift, do a wiggle and a giggle and shift. But I had to turn it into a supermarket.
I think that's a very funny line to come up with. Under duress, under extreme duress. Yeah. I'm not sure that I would come up with a good joke in that situation.
It's just that's like, so mostly it's just been like being asked to be quiet, and then people are normally like thrilled. It's fine.
Right.
Who doesn't want a comfortable shag? Like, it's just like, some people just don't want the washboard abs and the, like, you know, the toned statue shag.
I am so glad you said that.
Yeah.
I am so glad you said that.
I don't like it. I've never wanted to have sex with someone very skinny. No disrespect to them, but like, I like a cushion for all the pushing they're going to do, because I'm tired.
I was really upset when I was in my 20s and women started talking about, oh, I like that guy. He's got such a great ass. And I was like, what? We have to have asses? We need asses? Because I have nothing. There's nothing there.
Yeah, I'm the same. Pray for the butlers.
I just don't know.
We should start a hashtag.
Yeah. No, it's, and I was visibly upset. And I was saying to my women friends, I didn't realize that, you know, I thought we had to have like wide shoulders, and it was good that I was tall, and of course other parts are important, but no one had ever mentioned that had never been on the list. And suddenly I'm being told by women, oh no, that's something we think about, and we look at guys' asses and we object.
Must be so awful to feel you're being objectified and expected to live up to a physical.
Yes, that's the point I'm trying to make, is men to the exclusion of any other gender, in my opinion, have been put in this ridiculous position of being objectified. Is that, am I going, yeah. am I, what
no,
am I doing?
It's what I campaign for all the time. It's just men's rights.
I knew that you and I would see eye to eye on this.
Yeah, that's what I weigh is about, my podcast. It's just about a man's right to be buttless.
I think that I'm tired of it. I'm tired of living up to this standard.
You should be. It's been too much. You're targeted constantly online.
It's too much, and it's gone on for too long.
Yeah.
And it's got to, it stops now.
It's very sexist.
It's just specifically
women
me.
Have just been letting go for 2,000 years.
Now, talk about I Weigh, because it is fascinating what you're doing, and I love what you're doing, but let's talk about it. Let's talk about I Weigh.
Okay, so I Weigh is a kind of online movement that I started that is just a movement against shame. It's a mental health movement, and we focus on every different type of marginalized group. So just all of the shame and the mental health issues that they may carry because they've been otherized by society. So it started because I saw a picture of the Kardashians and they had numbers written across their body. And so I clicked on that picture because I wanted to know if it was how much money they had. Mm-hmm. So I was curious. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. It wasn't how many awards they've won or how much money they have. It was their fucking weight. Mm-hmm. And once I clicked on that, because of the algorithms of Instagram, suddenly more and more pictures of more only women were coming up with their weight written across their bodies. And so I tried really hard to find pictures of men, famous men or businessmen, and I couldn't find anything. And it hit me that, God, in 2018, I, as someone who had an eating disorder as a child, 20 years later, we still don't care about what men look like and how much they weigh anywhere near as much as we obsess over that, those numbers with women. We estimate a woman's entire value and worth via the numbers on a scale. Right, right. That just felt crazy to me. So I posted in a moment of rage and possibly some PMS that I had PMS. I was very angry and I posted, well, I weigh my financial independence and my activism and my relationship and my friendships and the eating disorder I survived. I weigh the sum of my motherfucking parts.
Right.
And it just resonated with people. I had a very small following, but it went completely viral. I received 10,000 responses from women sending me what they weigh in all their attributes and contributions to society. Started an Instagram account, thought it would be a very short phase. And 2.5 years later, I have 1.3 million followers on Instagram on this I Weigh account. We are a movement that are changing bills in the United States. We have changed a global policy across all social media. And we have a podcast and a YouTube channel. And we are like a learning space for people about different groups, but we're also just somewhere where you can come to feel represented and feel okay about the fact that you're not okay.
Yeah. I have, first of all, I'm indebted to you because I have children, they're teenagers. I have a 14-year-old son. I also have a 16-year-old daughter. So I see what she's exposed to. I see,
and also what he's exposed to.
Right. Well, he's exposed to having a, a father who he thinks is an idiot. That's the thing. But no, both of them. But I have told them, I said, I think you're growing up in a more perilous environment than the one I grew up in. And it's switching it, because most parents love to tell their children, why, when I was your age, we didn't have cable TV. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to take the kind of trips you guys get to take. And we don't do that. Yeah. I say to them, I'm looking at what you're dealing with, and I find it much more perilous and intimidating than anything I had to deal with. So how can we help?
We had to pay for our peril when we were younger. That was much harder to access. You know, I had to buy the fashion magazines that would fuck me up and make me think I was fat and ugly. Whereas it finds them, it hunts them. It's like the John Krasinski film with Emily Blunt. Like,
yes.
It hunts you down in the night.
Right.
And so they've got no way of escaping it, and they're just being so fucking warped. And I guess that's why it's so important for me and people like me to do the work that we do, just to educate kids. All we're trying to do, look, we can't change anything, we can't cancel anyone, we can't cancel anything, but we can educate you. And I think that we've entered this real, really odd moment of moral superiority where people make people feel dumb for trying to learn and for not arriving already fully informed about everything. And I think that's fucking stupid. And it also devalues progress.
Yeah.
And what is the point of activism if you're not open to the idea that people fucking change? And so I started this whole platform as a chance to educate myself, because I'm really ignorant. I left school at the car accident, and so therefore I never went back. I'm super uneducated, ignorant, not very well read, nowhere near as much as I would like to be and should be at my age. And I don't think there's anything embarrassing about trying and learning.
Right.
And so I've created this space so other people can try and learn with me. And it's okay if you're stupid, because so am I. And let's be less stupid together.
I think what you're talking about is this fear, this dreadful fear everyone has, is no one wants to be caught in an imperfect moment, because there's such a chance these days of getting shamed.
We're the products of our fucking environments. So I think that that's also really important to take into account. Both sides need to shift. And I wasn't just talking about race. I'm talking about when it comes to trans issues or feminism or anything, disability rights. We have to become more comfortable with fucking up. But also, when people make an innocent mistake, a clearly innocent mistake, and don't have a record of harmful behavior, we need to start giving people the benefit of the doubt, because we're stopping people from putting their hands up and asking the important questions. And I'm not talking about adults. I'm talking about the kids, the ones that we can most easily influence to be progressive. They are watching adults tear each other apart, and they are ingesting this and thinking, oh shit, it's better to say nothing than to expose a hint of ignorance. Otherwise, people shame you as if you are, it's like, we can't separate ignorance from evil. There is a difference, and we have to learn how to separate the two so we can understand that we don't also lump everyone together as harmful when some of those people have great potential to be allies, but therefore then the actually harmful people get to hide in a mass group. We need to learn how to separate those people off so we can find them and kill them. No, and really go to town, hunt them and kill them. That they are safe to be around.
You want them running for a while before they're killed. You know, talking to you about all of this, and I've been aware of how outspoken you've been, only makes me more impressed with the performance you turned in as Tahani, because you were playing someone that initially you might loathe. You did loathe, and you actually made her much less likable than she was originally written.
Yeah, because I think that the British think that the English are very charming, and we're not. We're utterly charmless. We're just posh. I think that we've been given too easy a ride over the United States. And so I think that it was important for, in order to make her like as funny and as frustrating as she could be, like to give her as many dimensions as possible so she doesn't become the hot one mm-hmm. on the show, because that mm-hmm. was my fear. Because that's A, too much pressure for me to live up to, but also just, and that's not what Mike Sher was planning, but it was just, she felt so polished, and I wanted her to be truly English. I wanted true representation of how passive aggressive and insincere and ridiculous we can be. And I love the English, but this is who we are. I love us for all of our faults. Yeah. And also what's cool about Mike Sher is the fact that he's not an egomaniac. The fact that he was always like, okay, you do your take and then we'll do mine. And then I'll figure out in the edit. And so I didn't know until season one came out that he'd shaped the character right. as I had wanted. He just edited and he used my takes, my choices. And I just thought that was very cool. I'm so spoiled for working with Mike Sher.
Mike Sher, anyone who doesn't know, the creative mind, the showrunner for The Good Place.
And The Office and Parks and Recreation.
But he has a reputation in the business. This is behind the scenes stuff, but he has the most stellar reputation as a showrunner mm-hmm. of anybody. Everyone says he's not just incredibly gifted, but he's a very kind boss, and he cares about the people that work for him, and he doesn't want them, they have families, to go home too late. Everyone wants to work with him because he has that reputation.
And he has a no asshole policy, which doesn't mean you have to sew your asshole up before you start working with him. Just
see, that's
clear.
What I misunderstood when I applied. Yeah. Is I actually I used a cork,
like a eunuch. he gives you, it's a one strike rule of bad behavior. So that's it. That's you're out. You treat anyone like shit, you're out. Doesn't matter how high or low down the ladder you are, you're out. And you know that from it's the very first thing he ever says to you before welcoming you onto the show.
Right.
Is that I have two policies. Number one, the best joke wins. And number two, I have a no asshole policy. So that was great, because it cultivated an atmosphere where nobody was a diva.
And I think that's very rare. I have been a showrunner and I'm betraying my age now. I've been running a late night show for 27 years, and I am the show.
You have a late night show.
Oh God! Yes, it's a spinoff from the podcast. The podcast I've been doing for 35 years, and then a couple
did
of
you
years.
Invent the podcast.
I did. When we first did them, they were on television, and then
you would just stand. It was basically just a speech.
It was a microphone and part of a face leaning in. But I've been running a show for a very long time, and my policy has always been: you do as I say. And I am an insane Roman emperor, and I'm given 75,000 chances to be an absolutely reprehensible asshole.
Anyone who ever watches you, we definitely get alpha.
You all get.
We all see alpha. Yeah.
Yes, alpha. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Alpha.
Radiates through the
screen. Overly. Too much testosterone, I think, has always been the issue for mm-hmm. me as a showrunner. I like preying on people's worst fears, right, Sona? What do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He rules with an iron fist. It's mm-hmm. terrifying.
She's crying.
Yeah,
right now.
I'm so scared of him.
Yeah.
He makes her sit on a pain mat while she's listening to this. Have you heard about these?
What is it?
It's the most fucking LA thing I've ever heard of. A bunch of very like big fancy celebrities have gone and bought themselves pain mats so they can sort of feel pain and feel discomfort.
A pain mat, like, I'm imagining...
It's like pins.
Like pins that you lie on.
Yeah, you sit on.
So that they can know what it's like to...
I think so, or like externalize their inner artist pain. And this is me just being like, famous people can't be in pain. They absolutely can and often are. In fact, they get into this industry normally because they're in pain.
Yeah.
But
I've not heard about the pain mat.
Yeah, the pain mat. Bunch of fancy hippie celebs just sitting on a pain mat. While other people live a pain mat. Their whole lives is just one big pain mat.
Right. Other people are going to...
prick in Calabasas sitting on a pain mat in their giant mansion.
So basically, we live in a country where a lot of people are not going to get $600 payments from the government.
Mm-hmm. And other people are living on a $600 pain mat.
Yes, exactly. They paid $600 for the privilege of trying to understand what pain is.
Yeah.
I've got to get one. But I want mine to be a really good one. I don't want the shit one. I want the really good one.
The Bluetooth one?
I want one.
Shout insults at you.
I want to do that thing where you look on Amazon and you're like, no, I don't want to see the cheapest. Show me the most expensive. I would go to the most expensive. And you know who makes it? I'm sure it's made in Sweden.
Or it's Musk.
Yes.
Musk would make the best, the ultimate pain mat. Sorry, I don't know how I took you here.
No, I know, but I'm thinking about getting one. Sona, get me a pain mat. Are you looking up pain mat?
I am, actually.
Expensive version of what you're sitting on.
I want
right
the very
now.
Best one.
I'm looking at one that's $1,700.
No. Is this a real thing?
I'm not joking.
Wait, talk to me about it. What is it? Tell us about it.
Well, some of them are like for acupressure and stuff, but I bet there's like a hidden celebrity connect that does the really intense stuff, and that's probably really expensive.
What a bunch of cunts.
Yeah.
I know. Okay, you know what? I'm going to talk to you about your language. Okay. I've let it go. You've had so many fucks on this show, and you've had so many shits, and you don't give a fuck about shitting, and you don't give a shit about fucking.
Yeah.
But now you've
how we communicate.
No. That is no excuse here. As I've said many times, this is a podcast primarily for children. It's by children for children, and I don't appreciate what you're doing. You're taking us down a very bad road.
Oh, fuck off.
Okay, well, I don't give about a shit about you telling me to fuck off.
It sounds great in my accent.
Fuck you, you. Okay, it's not working. I can't do it. I just can't do it. Let's say I do come over and I'm with you and your boyfriend. Yeah. And let's just follow this scenario.
So we're in our robes.
Well, I'm just hanging out. And
you better not be hanging out of your robe.
No. Trust me.
Okay.
That can't happen anymore. There's been an accident. But my point is, if I'm hanging around with you guys, what are you doing for fun? What do you like to do just around the house? What's your place of joy? Do you guys just watch TV together?
It's snacking and TV. It's truly just the food and comedy combination for us is enough. We're very low-key people. And also, you know, we've indulged in an immense amount of privilege in the fact that we've been touring artists our whole lives.
Right.
We've seen so many things in the world. We've done all of these, you know, gone to all the places, gone to all the fancy parties that you're supposed to enjoy, but they're fucking horrible and the people are terrible. And you're wearing something uncomfortable.
I was never
invited.
I was not invited. It was so embarrassing when you said, we've all been to the parties with the beautiful people and it's boring, right? I can't help you there. No. I've been to a few parties where there were some major celebrities, but I've been to shockingly few.
Yeah. And so, you know, like we've kind of had a really amazing and diverse opportunity to find out what we like. And really what we like is the same shit that we liked when we were 12, which is just comedy and chocolate.
Yeah.
And so we just watch stand-up or comedies together, series together, very low-key couple who really just spend our lives on aeroplanes and are just so thrilled to be at home with each other right now. So that's it. It's very dull. It's you, it's me, and my horny ginger dog, and my other horny ginger dog, Conan.
Nice.
My boyfriend,
that's right,
horny ginger dog.
Oh, that's right. Your boyfriend is a redhead, a ginger, as you say. And it's interesting that you're drawn to a redhead. It's interesting.
Yeah, that one time.
Well, everyone knows that we are the
sort of like a comet, like Haley's Bob.
No, you were drawn to him because you know that
the pubes. I know about.
Oh my god!
Sorry,
it's insane. No, it's true. Every night in the shower, I look down and it looks like there's a fire. Fire has broken out.
Forest fire.
Looks like a fire around a sort of a little igloo.
Move on, Conan.
Igloo.
I'm sorry. Yeah, fire broke out around an igloo. There's been some malformation. We're not going to talk about that. It's really lovely talking to you.
This is my favorite time ever on a podcast. I feel so comfortable and relaxed.
Well, yeah. I'll come.
Maybe too relaxed.
please, just no more swearing. I can't handle it anymore.
Colin, too relaxed? Yes or no? That's a yes. That's a resounding yes.
Colin, you're also from across the pond, are you not? Is there a way that Colin can speak to us? You have a microphone there, don't you?
Hi there. Yes.
Colin, I just want your perspective. Where are you from, Colin?
Manchester.
Manchester, yes, that's right. Do you agree with what Jamila has said about, does it ring true to you about the English?
It's all poppy syndrome for sure. I'm not as experienced with our colonial history, but it's all poppy syndrome. Absolutely. Everyone hates to see someone succeed.
So do you hate Jamila right now because she's done so well?
No, because we've risen together. He's my producer.
Right. I know he's your producer, but you've really risen, and there must be some hatred within you if you're a proud Englishman right now. There must be some.
I guess there should, but there isn't, because Jamila just sort of turned up in LA and was like, we'll be friends. And so we were. And so it's difficult to resent that success.
Okay. Well, that's no fun.
I was hoping.
She should have elbowed me aside by now, and then I could resent her.
Do you guys ever go to a pub together and get a pint? What do you do? Do you ever do anything?
God, where would we even do that here?
You're talking about, they have fake pubs all over the place here down in Santa Monica.
They're very distressing. I hate the fake pubs here. No, yeah. English people like to just break bread. That's it. We break bread.
That's fascinating.
We talked a big talk and got sent home with our knickers down.
But you had it worked for so long.
For
it worked
a bit.
For
no
so
one cares
long.
About the journey.
And then it all went away.
It's
and
not
like,
how you start, it's how you finish.
Who the hell was that?
I don't know.
You just
it's
did
not
it.
Not how
it,
you go, it's how you land.
Oh my God. You just became Martha Ray. I don't know
face
who are
when
you.
I did that,
yeah, and
you
she's
had
do,
an out of
she's
experience.
She's doing a dance. She's flailing her arms around and she's saying, "How you start? It's how you finish, baby." I didn't know that person was in there.
Yeah, but it's a lot about me. You don't know yet.
You should talk in a very profane, sexual way as that woman. That would be the way to go. You know, that's that character should then start to morph that way. I'm telling you, that's okay. The future for that character.
Great.
Absolutely a treat talking to you, and I look forward to hanging out at your house with...
Oh, God, it's not finishing on the song, is it? Oh, God.
Thank you so much for being so honest and so funny. I'd appreciate, clean up the language a little bit, but I really do adore you, and I think you're doing something very special, and as the father of a 16-year-old girl, I'm very happy that you're doing this work. I really am. Very appreciative. So
thank you.
And she adores you. She's a my kids absolutely love The Good Place. So I get points for just knowing you. It's one of those things where they don't respect me, but when I can go home and say, I saw Jamil today, there I'm suddenly cool for about 6 seconds.
The Arnott of cool.
Yeah. thank you. Thank you so much.
Loads of love.
You know, it's incredible to have the flexibility to work in all sorts of places, whether it's taking video calls from the park or emailing large files while you're grocery shopping. Sona, this is good for you.
Is it?
Because you're always doing whatever work you do for me from fun locations.
But I like blaming it on not having reception.
I know, but you can't do that here. Working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network, which is why you should check out T-Mobile, Sona.
Okay.
Then you got no excuses. They're America's largest and fastest 5G network. With T-Mobile, you'll be covered in more places with the 5G speed you need for your life on the go. Plus, they also cover more highway miles with 5G than anybody else. Check it out if you don't believe me. Hey, Blake, you've got T-Mobile, right?
I do. I was actually just up in the woods in Idlewild. It was fantastic for the weekend. And my T-Mobile didn't miss it. My T-Mobile phone didn't miss it.
You know, I wouldn't think you'd need a cell phone because you speak so loudly into a microphone.
Well, I had to look some stuff up.
Just take it down.
I didn't know when brunch was.
I can hear him.
When the restaurant's open for brunch.
Okay.
So I used my T-Mobile coverage to check
terrific,
out brunch.
Blake. That's all right. Anyway, wherever you are, take it from the loud-speaking Blay. If you're on the go, you want to be in the know, you want to make the show.
What?
T-Mobile.
Okay.
That's the one for you.
That was
I should
weird.
Have rhymed it with go. Anyway, find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today. Coverage not available in some areas. Fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speed Test Intelligence Data Q3 2023. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com. If most people are being honest, no one really knows what you do for work, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, especially if you're in a, what I like to call B2B.
Oh,
you know?
What is that?
I'll explain.
Okay.
That's a business doing business with other businesses.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I call it B2B. It's a little thing. It's also, it's a boy band I'm working on. Anyway, fortunately, LinkedIn has a network of professionals who get what you do, and you can reach the right people
who matter most to your company because they're LinkedIn.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
LinkedIn has over, this is the fun part to say, 1 billion members.
Are you serious?
Yeah. That's more people than are on Earth because there are people on the moon using it and Saturn. That's over 1 billion members on its platform, including 70 million decision makers. God, I'd like to meet a decision maker. Since LinkedIn members are regularly updating their work history, you can precisely build a target audience by job title, industry, company, and more. Man, you can reach the right people for your, I'm going to say it again, B2B business with LinkedIn ads.
Yeah.
Gets even better because LinkedIn will give you a $100 credit on your next campaign.
Hmm.
There you go. Just go to linkedin.com/teamcoco to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/teamcoco. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's hard for people to know because this is a podcast, but I have developed a radically different look in the last couple of weeks because I haven't had a haircut since quarantine started. And I look really different now. I mean, the old Conan pompadour.
Yeah.
This is an engineering thing, but when it gets, the pompadour can only hold so much weight.
Yeah.
You can use various products to keep the pompadour going for a while to get that really, the Conan shelf, the pomp, the poof, whatever you want to call it. But what's happened is about 3 weeks ago, the pompadour was crazy long and I had piled the hair up and it was just insane looking, right? It looked like I had a baguette on my head. And then I remember very clearly, it was late in the afternoon and I heard a creaking sound and the pompadour collapsed.
Oh no.
It collapsed and little workmen that were working on it were killed.
Is that how it stays up?
Yeah, yeah. There are little workmen in there and I heard creaking and then screams and we tried to retrieve whoever was in there.
Oh no.
But they were all gone. We lost all souls.
Oh man.
And the pompadour collapsed and came crashing down. And of course we taped it off and we looked at it and then I realized I can't do this anymore. Screw it. So I went out and I got a headband.
Uh-huh.
Now I walk around with this big, crazy headband. And it's kind of like an 80s band. Remember Dire Straits,
like Rambo?
Mark Knopfler, you know, or Bruce Springsteen of that certain era. I'm a guy that wears a big headband that covers my whole forehead and shoves my hair up above me. And then
is it terry cloth?
It's made of actually it's a company called Buff, B-U-F-F. We're not getting any money for this. This is just a shout out to the good people at Buff. They're pretty inexpensive, but they're also a mask too, because you wear them around your neck. So I've got one around my neck.
Yeah.
And I've got one around my head and it pulls up and it makes a mask and I'm this different guy. I look kind of like what do you think?
A ninja?
I was going to say the villain from The Karate Kid. What was his name?
Oh, yeah.
Johnny, Danny?
Someone look it up.
I think it was Johnny. Sweep the leg, Johnny.
Yeah.
Sweep the leg.
Yeah. He's the incredible bully.
Yeah, he's the bully because he had also a lot of like hair coming out from a headband that he wore. And that's what I'm...
He had a headband. And he also, you probably are thinking of him because he was incredibly cruel, heartless.
Yeah.
And he had a mean twisted up face all the time. He was always just... He and his friends always just wanted to chase Ralph Macchio. When Ralph Macchio was on his bike, they made him crash off a hill, remember?
Yeah,
and then he was like, we showed you. Who does that? I do that when I'm wearing a headband. When I'm wearing a headband, I become the villain from Karate Kid.
And you shove people in the street.
Yeah, and I'm constantly wanting to threaten other people. I go into dojos where I don't even belong, and then I don't know any karate, and I just go in there and I wear my headband and I start mocking other people and trying to, you know, hurt their feelings or make them feel inadequate. And a lot of times, the guy, the dojo master, the sensei, if you will, I suppose, says, "Who are you? Oh, you look like you're Conan O'Brien, but he would never come in here. And your hair's too long. But you look really, you seem mean and dicky and you should probably go. You don't even seem like you fight." And I'd be like, "I don't fight. I don't fight at all." But now that I'm wearing this headband, I am the mean kid from Karate Kid. I'm sure someone's looked up his name. What's his name?
Johnny Lawrence.
That's it.
And didn't he come back? back? Didn't they bring that show back?
Yeah. And actually, speaking of hair, I went to get my hair cut a couple years ago, and he goes to the same place I get my hair cut, and he was getting his hair cut.
Oh.
Couldn't have been nicer.
He was nice?
I heard he's a nice guy. He's
so nice. I've heard, yeah, I've heard across the board. Yeah, but
he's
incredibly
so
nice.
Convincing at being a dick.
He must be trying to undo that reputation.
Yeah, he spent his whole life since Karate Kid going out of his way to say, let me get that door for you. And people are like, you're still a prick. You made Ralph Macchio crash on his bike.
You're going to sweep my knee.
Yeah.
Oh, played by William Zabka or Zabka?
Zabka.
Okay, yeah. Played by William Zabka. It was in the chat.
Oh, okay.
Adam just sent that to me.
And
everybody.
He's still just as good looking, that guy.
He is.
Yeah, some guys like us don't age. You know what it is? It's the headband. The headband pulls the skin taut. What I've noticed is that instead of, you know, people in my business have to think about, you know, at some point, do we have some surgical procedure? Do we not? Uh-huh. And I'm made of cheap Irish stock. So we're just, we just rot like pumpkins. And I've decided that this headband, which I'm wearing because my hair is too long, it literally is in my eyes now. So I'm wearing this headband and I'm liking it because one of the side effects is that it's pulling my skin taut.
You do look good though. It does look good. But I will say, rather than like Dire Straits, you look more like you're in Flock of Seagulls. Very
yes.
Brave.
Yeah, Flock of Seagulls. I've had a few people say Flock of Seagulls and I'm sticking with it. Now, let's be honest. I could get a haircut at this point. I could.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could.
You could.
I could absolutely get a haircut. There are plenty of people who'd be willing to cut my hair and meet me in a field somewhere and we could both be wearing respirators and they could cut my hair. So it could be safely done. At this point, it's not even about that. I'm just going for it. I'm going for it. Because, you know, once I grew a beard and I was like, I'm just going to do it. And I did it. And now I'm thinking, I want this to grow so long that maybe I get a man bun. Maybe I would never do man bun. I'm just kidding about that. But I would like it tumbling like Jesus length. I want Jesus length hair. Jesus hair.
Are you worried without your hair and half your face covered, people probably don't recognize you anymore?
Well, you know what's funny? Even with a mask on, I walk around saying, I'm Conan.
Oh, okay.
So I'll put my mask on right now. So now my mask is on. I pulled it up from the bottom. And this is the experience. If you see a tall person who's pretty much all covered going, Conan, I'm Conan. I'm Conan.
Seems a little needy.
I'm Conan. I do that. I do.
Okay.
Because I desperately need people to notice me. It's the only reason I got into show business is so that people would be excited to see me and go, oh my God, it's Conan. Uh-huh. I cannot live without that.
Okay.
I sometimes wonder if you willed yourself to have red hair just for so it would stick out more.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of things I willed myself to do. I mean, I think that naturally I'm an amazing athlete, but I think I, listen to me, listen, hear me out. I willed myself to be inept and physically awkward because that's funnier. And when I was young, when I was very young, I was strikingly handsome. Strikingly. Okay. I mean, people used to say, good God, he's going to be a leading man. I was like, no, I'm interested in comedy. Huh. And I remembered as I was growing, I willed myself. I really do think through sheer force of will.
Sure.
I shaped my eyes to be kind of beady and my lips to be sort of thin and creepy.
Uh-huh.
I knew that my face to be kind of really big and wide and invasive. And I did all that because I thought, that's going to play better for comedy.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying that a lot of downsides to COVID, and I don't need to list them. You know, I don't need
good
to.
You said that.
You know, there are downsides to COVID, but everyone's looking for the silver linings, and I'm looking. I am exploring this new me, which is I'm Bjorn Borg, the tennis great in 1978.
You're Martina Navratilova.
Or you know what? I don't care. I'm gender fluid. It doesn't matter to me. I have no ego. I mean, I'm fine being either one. I'm sort of like Sean Cassidy. I'm Chrissy Teigen.
Wait, what?
I just threw her in there. I think she's very beautiful.
You can't just say you're her and then like, we'll be like, yeah.
Well, I almost got away with it.
No.
I'm on board, frankly. This
Matt.
Headband, what I'm saying, I'm going for a headband and I'm wearing it all the time. And I'm, you know, if you see a tall Dutch woman with a headband on the head and then underneath, that's me. That's Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
And also, if you hear the person saying through their mask, I'm Conan. That's me. And make a big fuss. make a big fuss and really get excited. And even if you're not a fan and you've never been a fan, do me a favor. How much would it cost you to go, oh my God, I grew up watching you. You're the best. You define comedy. Is that really going to hurt you to do that? That's not going to hurt you.
So people should just say that stuff to you.
Yes.
Even if it's not true, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you actively dislike me, why? That's a waste of time. No good comes of that. Come up to me and go like, you know what? Your work means so much to me and you're so great and you've brought so much joy to my life. Easy. I don't want to. I'm not a fan. Fuck you.
Oh my God.
Just do it. God damn it.
You can't say fuck you to people who might not be
this
your
headband
fan.
Headband guy's got an edge.
I'm sorry. It's the headband squeezing. It's squeezing the vessels in my near my brain and it's creating microbursts of hostility.
You're so
just fucking say you like me. Just fucking praise me. If you see me on the street, I'm Conan. Praise me. I'm Conan. Okay, this went
so aggro.
Very badly.
I like your long hair.
I'm gonna stick with it.
It's really good look for you and I actually like it.
Yeah. All right.
You know what we should do is keep going with it and check in throughout the season on how it's doing.
Yeah, and we can post photographs that then you can put them on people's computers. But I'm digging the new look and just check me out. You know, I'll be out there. I'll be on the streets. I walk the streets. Yeah.
Go up to him. Tell him you love him.
Yeah.
Feed his need.
Don't forget to say Katakai as God made
her.
Katakai as God made her.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend with Sonam Obsession and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. The show is engineered by Will Becton. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.